to the debrief, everyone, here on the Law and Crime Network. We have a verdict in the penalty phase of the trial of a now fired Dallas police officer who is now, of course, also a convicted murderer. The big question, what will the sentence be? Amber Guyger took the stand, but still ended up being convicted of shooting and killing an unarmed African-American in his own apartment. Guyger testified that she thought the victim was an intruder. The jury of five African-Americans, five Asian or Latino Americans, and two white Americans issued a unanimous guilty verdict after 5 hours of deliberations across 2 days. On the stand, Guyger admitted she intended to kill when she pulled the trigger. The victim, of course, 26-year-old Botham John, an accountant who was merely sitting inside eating ice cream. Despite defense witnesses who discussed the confusing nature of the multi-story complex, the prosecution successfully argued that Guyger should have noticed the clues, that she was in the wrong place, and that her conduct was legally unreasonable when she pulled the trigger from her department-issued gun, fired, and killed Botham Jean. Let's jump in now with some analysis as we look into that courtroom. The judge just about to sit down on the bench. The jury, of course, determining the sentence in Texas. Defendants have the right to ask for a jury to determine a sentence, and there is a broad range at play here. Linda Kenny Bodden is my co-host here on the Law and Crime Network. Linda, we're talking a potential of 5 to 99 years, but the defense went for that sudden passion argument during this phase of the trial, and that might narrow things down to 2 to 20 years. That's if the jury buys it.
The jury will be offended by that, to suggest that Botham John actually could cause his death, cause her to have Amber Guyger's sudden passion, that she had to pull that trigger, I think would be insulting once they found murder.
I agree with that as well. Catherine Smith, you're sitting here in studio with me. I think it's an abrupt shift for the defense to even try to insert that into this case at this point. The prosecution didn't object to it, of course, because it's such an extreme shift in tactic that the jury probably will be offended by it.
Agreed. It's bizarre because there's really no basis in fact at all for that defense, because that passion defense requires that there be some affirmative act by the victim to incite the passion, and we just don't have that here.
We watch, as we look in that courtroom live, I should say, we're watching the defendant stand up. She's on the lower right-hand corner of the screen, the judge standing up. Gene Rossi, former federal prosecutor, we are told that dozens of security officers are gathering there. This may be even more tense than the actual guilty verdict.
Yes, I think most people felt that she'd get either murder or manslaughter. And now that it's murder, people are kind of expecting that it'll be a heavy sentence.
Gene, I've got to cut you off. I think the jury just walked back into the room there. The judge on the bench, let's listen.
Ms. Guyger, would you please stand? The jury having reached a verdict, I will now announce it. We, the jury, find unanimously that the defendant did not cause the death of Botham John while under the immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause, and assess the defendant's punishment at 10 years imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. In addition, we assess a fine of $0, and it's signed by the presiding juror. Would you like to have the jury poll?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Is there any legal reason why this sentence should not now be imposed? It is therefore the order, judgment, and decree of the court that you be taken by the Sheriff of Dallas County and safely transported by her to an agent or representative of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, and there you shall be confined until your sentence is discharged. Your sentence will begin today, and you will receive credit for any back time that you have. That being concluded, you may be seated, Ms. Guyger. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you are now released from my prior admonitions not to watch, listen, read, or to speak to anyone concerning this case. Oftentimes the attorneys like to speak with you to see if there were things that they could have done better, or if there are questions that you might have. You are absolutely under no obligation to speak with them. If you'd like to, you can remain in the jury room. If you would not like to, we will certainly make accommodations to get you safely to your destinations. But on behalf of all the judges here in Dallas County and the citizens of Dallas County, I want to thank you for your service. Being a juror is a very difficult job. but you help us to establish what criminal justice means here in Dallas County and in the state of Texas. And we thank you for your attention, your time, and your service. Thank you. This has been a most difficult case, and I want you to know we appreciate your service. And if you find yourself still having difficulty processing it in the future, let us know, and we can provide some counseling for you. Okay? Again, thank you.
All right.
You heard that sentence live right here on the Daily Debrief on the Law and Crime Network. 10 years in prison, no fine. Let's jump in with a reaction from the panel. Linda Kenny Budden, we accurately predicted that that sudden passion defense at this stage of the game would fall flat. It did, but 10 years, your reaction to that?
It's a win for the defense given all their missteps. It tells you that when the prosecution asked for 28 years, they split the baby and then they gave her some, maybe because they felt for her. They felt like we felt that somehow her defense had failed her, that she had been sexually abused. She should have taken the life. She's got to pay a penalty, but there's a warning for the next time. Don't do it.
Catherine Smith, trial attorney, what's your reaction to the 10 years?
I'm disappointed. This was the result that I had feared. I mean, all logic would dictate if they believed that there was murder and they believed that the sudden passion should not have intervened, that she would get more than this. I'm disappointed.
Gene Rossi, former federal prosecutor, your thoughts?
I'm insulted, and I'll tell you why. I know people who committed tax crimes who got more than 10 years. I know nonviolent drug dealers who got more than 10 years. This jury found that she intentionally took the life of a helpless man who was 26 years old. I am offended. I was predicting maybe 30 or 40 years. If I'm Amber Geiger, I'm gonna pop the champagne.
Wow, that's a harsh reaction. Wow. Gene Rossi, also watching along with us, of course, is forensic death examiner Joseph Scott Morgan. Joseph, you've been watching this from the beginning. Forensics played some role in this. The trajectory of the bullet was discussed a lot. What's your reaction to this? 10 years.
I was surprised. I have to say, I was thinking at minimum she was going to get probably about 20. Just from the base fact, like Heather was saying, they found murder here. This is not a manslaughter case. And the fact that they come back with a 10-year sentence is a major head-scratcher for me. It just doesn't balance out. I'm surprised by it. But, you know, the jury has spoken at this point in time.
We're going to move along and listen to some of the previous testimony. At this phase of the trial, the sister of the victim testified during this phase of the trial and during the original phase of this trial. So she was on the stand twice. Let's listen to what she told the jury in this sentencing phase.
I make it my duty to call my mom or text at least, you know, every day, a few times a day, because I know that was always a concern for her with both of them, to always have contact. So again, even though I'm low, I would still make it my duty to reach out to her just so that she knows that I'm okay.
How does it make you feel?
That I want my brother back. Like if I could just continue our conversation, our last conversation, just not let him hang up the phone.
One of the victim's coworkers also testified about missing the victim's uplifting presence at the office.
It's been rough. I used to see or talk to Bo on a daily basis for, you know, 3 years I knew him. Our group has had a very difficult time coming to terms.
And what do you mean by that?
It's just not, you know, not seeing him on a daily basis, or, you know, not having that guy to lift you up. I mean, it's been tough.
One of the victim's friends described the moment she learned of Botham John's passing.
Was told that both of them had been shot and he didn't make it. I slumped to the floor and I just kept screaming, wait, 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 wait. I hung up the phone and I called both of them 7 times. And there was no answer. I have never lost someone this close in my life. And the feeling is just unexplainable.
The state's final witness in this penalty phase of the case was the victim's father. We'll play that in a second. We're looking in as the victim's family walks out of that courtroom where that 10-year sentence was just handed down, along with one of the several attorneys representing the victim's family. We're hoping to hear from them any moment now as they filter out of that courtroom in Dallas. Meantime, let's listen to what the victim's father had to say on the stand.
Having him as a babe, just born us, and then my wife had to leave for university. I actually had him, bathed him, made his bottles, fed him, bring him to my mom's house, then go to work, returned, picked him up. It did not matter what time it was. I just wanted him with me.
Bertrand, you said that Sundays are not good for you anymore.
Because I'm not hearing his voice.
You've indicated to me in the past that you can't listen to videos of him singing.
I'm still not ready for it. Hurts me. He's not there.
The defense managed to get some headway at this stage of the case. The defense called a number of Geiger's friends to testify in her favor. But the most shocking testimony came when the defendant's mother testified that the defendant had been molested when she was a child.
On February 25th, 1995, Amber would have been 6 years old, is that right?
Approximately. Yes, ma'am.
On that morning, did you learn that Joe had been sexually molesting her?
Yes, ma'am.
In fact, did you call the Arlington Police Department to your house that morning?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you recall speaking with an officer Smith with the Arlington Police Department?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you explain what you saw that morning that caused you to confront Joe?
I was going back to the bedroom. I was fixing to take a shower, and I forgot my comb. And that's when I saw him coming out of the bedroom, and then Amber came out.
And as a result of some conversation that you had with Joe, and also with Amber, the police were summoned to your house, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And was Joe eventually arrested for indecency with a child, with Amber being the named victim?
Yes, ma'am.
He ended up pleading guilty on that case, is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
The prosecution wound up presenting disturbing deleted text messages where the defendant and her friends on the Dallas police force complained about working a parade in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and even joked about his death. The defendant went further and complained about working with people in general and tried to veil what many people perceived as a complaint about black colleagues.
Message sent to the defendant, when does this end, LOL. Outgoing message from the defendant, when MLK is dead, ... Oh wait, ... Incoming message says, ha. Outgoing message, just push them or spray with your pepper spray in that general area. I hate everything and everyone but y'all. Text from Martin Rivera, incoming. Damn. I was at this area with 5 different black officers. Not racist, but damn. Outgoing message. Not racist, but just have a different way of working, and it shows.
Some of those messages were about events unrelated to the parade, but the chain of conversations across many, many hours concerned many people. Couple those text messages with social media comments attributed to Geiger. Several of these were shown in court. One of the messages says, "No one ever thanked her for having the patience not to kill them." Another one says, "Wearing black means Geiger is already dressed for a funeral." Another one says, "Justice can mean just us, and it could be perceived as Geiger saying, look, I can take the law into my own hands." Another one says, "Kill first, die last, one shot, one kill." Those were her social media messages. And of course, during the penalty phase of this case, the defense sought to argue that Geiger shot Baltham Jean in sudden passion. The jury did not buy that theory, but if the jury did, it could have reduced the sentence from a 5 to 99 year sentence down to a 2 to 20 year range. Let's discuss all this evidence. Catherine Smith, you're here with me in New York. We just listen to the core of the case here from the state and from the defense. The defense must have scored some headway here because we only wound up with a 10-year sentence.
I'm scratching my head. I don't get it. And there just seemed, especially in the sentencing phase, to be such an overwhelming evidence that there was some racial biases and prejudices underlying the defendant. And again, we didn't bring that up in the actual the guilty phase. That came into the penalty phase. So you would think that once they decided on murder, then they see all of this, they would really throw the book at her. So I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I'm left scratching my head along with the rest of you. Linda Kenny Bodden, you're nodding in agreement that you also are a bit dumbfounded by this. What do we take away from those text messages? Is this the way police officers should be communicating with one another?
No, it's not. But, you know, it's even worse than we think in the sense of our co-host Brian Buckmeyer has looked at the Texas scheme and says that she'll end up doing 4 years in state prison. Now, people get more than 4 years for property crimes. But I think what you have here, this jury is a member of the community. They feel that the Dallas Police Department may be at fault here, that it's not fair to put her away for 99 years, as many of us wanted to do, or even 28 years. They'll put her away for a short period of time, but they're going to send the message that it could happen again, and maybe you won't be so lucky next time.
Gene Rossi, okay, what do you make of this whole thing? What do we read into those text messages? What do we read into the social media? So if we've got a 10-year sentence, does this get whittled down if she's on good behavior or something like that?
You know, I would love to talk to the jury, but I'm just having this gestalt moment. Is it possible that because you had two prosecutors do the guilt phase, and then out of the blue, you have two prosecutors who do the sentencing phase, and they focus a lot on the racial animus? I think that could have taken away from the gravity of the crime. Because what this was, and what Katie said at the beginning of 2 hours ago, this was an execution-style killing, whether he was black or whether he was white, and it was by an officer who just took the law in her own hands. So it's possible. I'd love to interview the jury that they felt it was a distraction and they should have focused on the crime itself.
One has to wonder, Joseph Scott Morgan, you remain with me here. If the jury was looking and saying, okay, well, we convicted, but there's some excuse playing going on here. You know, okay, maybe this isn't as serious as other murders. Maybe, we'll buy into this, that she was fearful because of the molestation which came out in this phase of the case. And maybe that's what led the jury to knock this back.
I don't know. I was talking with colleagues in the previous segment, and it smacked of intellectual laziness on the part of the defense. I thought I'm surprised. Whatever they did, it appears to have worked on her behalf because she winds up walking away with 10 years. And no, I doubt very seriously she's going to serve that entire amount. At the end of the day, Aaron, this is a police officer that was still a police officer, even after she's off duty. She has a higher standard to obey. It doesn't matter to me what her the idea that she's threatened. She knows what steps to take. She works within this environment. I'm dumbfounded, gobsmacked by this finding.
And many of us will sit here and remain stunned for a little while. We need to take a break here on The Debrief. We'll be back in a moment. Another case making news today. The federal judge has denied a request from R&B singer R. Kelly to get out of jail on bail before his criminal trials begin. Kelly, seen here in a separate state court proceeding where cameras were allowed, argued that it was unfair for only one of his two so-called lady friends to be able to visit him in jail. He also argued that he has health problems. Prosecutors, meanwhile, argued that R. Kelly would potentially flee the country as federal and state sex crimes charges pile up against him. The Law and Crime Network was there as R. Kelly's attorney reacted after the hearing.
There's no evidence that he's a flight risk. The government made some reference to in 2008, he did something to obstruct. I don't know what they're talking about. We haven't seen it. There's no evidence that he would obstruct. It's just, I think that people are just afraid to do what we think is the right thing here, which is to have him free on bond. He's presumed innocent, never been convicted of any charge. He'd be perfectly happy to be on some form of detention in his condominium in Chicago where he can work on the case. But the judge has ruled, and we respect the judge's ruling. There's no evidence that Robert Kelly or anyone associated with Robert Kelly has tried to obstruct these federal investigations, has tried to obstruct the state investigation.
Okay, we have just a couple seconds to talk about this. Former federal prosecutor Gene Rossi, what do you make of that argument? I think that you're laughing with me and at someone else.
I never laugh at you. I always laugh with you. I got to tell you, this is the chutzpah motion. If he just focused on risk of flight and even danger to the community, possibly, he would have been able to keep the judge with a straight face. But adding that he needs to have a relationship with one of his paramours is just not something he should have filed in court.
Yeah, that language in a court motion, the exact quote was lady friends. He wanted to be able to see both of his lady friends. Gene, appreciate your insights along with the rest of our panelists. That's all the time we have here on The Debrief. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.